Hey there, everyone. Nate Dickinson here on Kate 1450. We're talking sports all hour here on Kate, and it's a game week for Minnesota football, finally, as they get ready to face off against Michigan this weekend. It's a night game, prime time, under the lights, and College Game Day is going to be there, too. Mike Grimm joining us to talk about that and a whole bunch of other stuff here on KATE. And Mike, we'll get to the football talk. It's huge that football's back in Minnesota this week. But we do have to start a little bit with someone who meant so much to football at the college, pro, and really all sports levels here in Minnesota. We did lose Sid Hartman yesterday at 100 years old, a long, full life. And I did just want to ask you a little bit about what you can remember and your thoughts on Sid as everyone remembers him here today.
Yeah, well, obviously, he was just an icon here in sports. I mean, when you think about usually when you think of sports icons in a market or a state, you think of coaches or athletes. And, you know, to have, you know, occasionally it's someone's been a radio broadcaster like Ray Christensen was for the Gophers for 50 years. You know, you can call him an icon. But really what Sid's been able to do, I mean, you know, somebody should make a movie about his life when you think about it. You know, he started selling newspapers and he was like 10 years old just in the neighborhood to make some money, and pretty soon started working for the newspaper and, you know, basically turned that into all kinds of opportunities and unbelievable. I mean, right up until the end. And so it is, you know, on one hand, it's sad, you know, that we've lost him because it won't be the same seeing him in the press box. On the other hand, it does take a moment, or we should take a moment, I should say, to you know, look at it as a celebration too. I mean, it's 100 years, and this guy legitimately had a column in the newspaper the morning that he passed away. Think about that. I mean, he worked right up until the end. And I know people much closer to him than I. I mean, he knew who, you know, we knew each other, and I can tell a couple of funny stories about some things where we had some interactions which were fun and kind of funny, because Sid had certainly had some idiosyncrasies, and he was a unique guy, like everyone's kind of unique, but he was really unique. Like we'll be telling, everyone will be telling Sid stories forever, like just these great stories. But, you know, the thing that made him so good was he was just so relentless. Like, he had this great network of friends, and of course the joke was close personal friends, but that wasn't a joke. That was real. I mean, he had the respect of people. He treated people well. And one thing about Sid, if you could help him, he was gonna make life easy for you. It was a give and take with how he operated, but that allowed him to break almost any major story in the Twin Cities. And I remember just a few years ago, Mike Zimmer knew that they were going to draft Anthony Barr, and Anthony Barr was really not supposed. Was that the fifth pick? I want to say. And Anthony Barr wasn't projected to go that high. And Sid had in the paper the morning of the draft something along the lines of, you know, look for the Vikings to take a hard look at Anthony Barr. And I can remember reading that going, what? You know, Anthony Barr hasn't been suggested at all. And sure enough, they draft Anthony Barr. And then it comes out, you know, a little later that, yeah, Mike Zimmer just basically said, Sid, I'll give you the scoop. Don't tell everyone we're drafting him. Just say, you know, that's where we're headed. And he had it, and he nailed it, and he... the only guy that had the pick right. Everyone was picking other people, but that's the kind of respect that he had. But he worked the phones back when that was something to do. And because of those connections, he broke, you know, he went, you know, 75 years basically as a newspaper man and broke stories all the time. And he took pride in getting, and this is what, you know, it's hard now in the social media age and now especially in the Zoom where every reporter's on the Zoom, and you really, it's hard to go get a guy and, you know, be off to the side and get some unique information. But that really is what Sid made a living on, are the little nuggets of info on people and stuff. Even if it wasn't like earth-shattering news, it was a little nugget here and a little nugget there that nobody else had. And he was able to do that, you know, every single day. And he, you know, I don't think I'm exaggerating to suggest that he broke more stories than anyone in the history of newspaper. I mean, he worked longer than anybody, 75 years, and he legitimately broke stories every, you know, almost every day, you know, in his heyday because of that network. You know, his rear end off and was relentless. I mean, he followed Joe Namath into a shower to get an interview with him because Joe didn't want to talk, and Sid was relentless to get it, and Sid had his tape recorder and followed Joe Namath into the shower to get an interview with him. No one else was going to do that, but Sid didn't care. So So, you know, those are some good stories. As far as me personally, my first year here was 2006. And people remember that was the year Dan Munson got fired 7 games into the season. So that was my first year. So I announced 7 games, men's basketball, and Dan Munson got fired. That was in November. And I was not the play-by-play guy for football at that time. That was Dave Lee. I was the pregame and postgame host. So the Gophers lose the bowl game late December, and Glenn Mason gets fired. And that happened while the Vikings were playing a game, and I was covering the Vikings game. It was against the St. Louis Rams at that time, and I that game for multiple reasons. I had moved in from St. Louis, so I was going to see a lot of my old coworkers and friends that I had established great relationships with, and I was also getting, covering for Minnesota News Network. And so the game's over, news broke that Glenn Mason was fired. And so Dan Munson had been fired, Glenn Mason had been fired, and we're all walking down the bowels of the stadium. You take the steps instead of the elevator in the post game. And, you know, at that time, Sid was only 85, or 86 maybe, and he's taking the steps like everybody else. And like I'm, you know, everybody's, you know, the steps are no fun. Especially when you're 85. And so all of a sudden I hear Sid's voice yelling, "Coach Killer, Coach Killer, Coach Killer." And I don't know, I have no idea what I look up because I'm a few steps, you know, there's like 15 or 20 reporters all in a line going down the steps. And they all look up to Sid as he's screaming. And I look up and I'm shocked that he's pointing at me, like doing his point thing at me. Like, "He's the Coach Killer. He shows up and all the coaches get fired. All the coaches get fired." And so everyone gets a good chuckle out of that. And the new guy walking down the steps is like, "Oh, my God, Sid's yelling at me for getting the coaches fired." So that was my first indoctrination into Sid. And we've had some pretty good stories that some other day we can get into more detail.
Yeah, he was always nice to me. I only got to talk to him a few different times just in passing, walking, like you said, up and down from press boxes and things. But I remember my first encounter with him, I think it was Vikings post game or maybe Gophers post game. First week I was here, again, this is only a few years ago, but you walked in and I saw Sid, and me being kind of just uneducated, not knowing anyone in the cities, I didn't know who he was. And it was kind of just like what anyone, I think, or at least I hope, hopefully I'm not too terrible of a person, would think if they saw someone like Sid, not knowing who he was, sitting in the corner. And I basically thought to myself, "Who's that old coot sitting in the corner?" Not having any idea. But I remember I didn't ask anybody because it was so obvious that everybody else in the room waiting for the press conference did know who that was, that I didn't want to just be that guy who was outed as the guy who doesn't know anything and the new guy right off the bat. It was just, I don't know what it was about it, but it was just so obvious that everybody else knew who Sid Hartman was and I didn't yet, and I didn't want to say anything. That's just my first memory of him. And of course, throughout the time that I got to at least talk to him a couple of times and just hearing him in press conferences, he was just someone who made you smile.
Yeah, and he like I said, he was relentless. He had no conscience. Like, this was true for all the Gopher football coaches. They'd do their Tuesday press conference, and they'd get done, and he would immediately hop up out of his chair and follow them into their office. And then he would do his own little personal press conference. And it was never worked out. It was never like, "Hey, I'm going to send an email and request the interview." Sid just did it. Like, nobody else would do that. Like, even a beat guy isn't going to just stand up and follow the coach into his office. But none of the coaches ever said anything because it was Sid. That's just how it worked. And so when Jerry Kill was here, Jerry would do his press conference. And then Matt Limegrover was the offensive coordinator, and Tracy Claves was the defensive coordinator. And then they would follow him. So it was the head coach and the two coordinators on Tuesdays. And so Sid would follow Jerry right out of the room. And then in the middle of, normally it was Tracy Claves' news conference, Sid would then come back in and sit down. And so, of course, he would then immediately ask a question. And it was usually one that had already been asked, because this is, you know, 7 or 8 minutes, 10 minutes into the press conference. So everyone always would get a chuckle out of that. But nobody nowadays would have, you know, nobody's just standing up and following the head coach into his office to stick a microphone in his face after he just talked for 20 minutes to everybody. But the coaches would be like, "What are you doing?" Right? The beat writer, even me as the radio guy who, you know, is, you know, kind of an ally to the guy. You know, they're not going to, unless I would have emailed and said, hey, do you mind if we do an interview after the thing? I got to talk to you about something. And yeah, sure. But it was just a standard thing. They knew that was it. Sid would, this is Sid's time. And away he went.
Yep, it'll certainly be someone who's missed around all of Minnesota sports for a long time. And as you said, the stories go on and on with Sid Hartman. So, of course, a well-lived life to him. And he taught so many people so many things. Like, I don't know what, like the coaching tree, I don't know what his writing tree would be, but it has to be huge.
No question, no question. And you know, Sid, I thought Pat Royce did a really good job with Sid's obituary, because Sid is, has always known that Sid is an information gatherer. He isn't a writer per se. So he gathers the information, and then he will, you know, he would get the info to people who would then, you know, help him. I'm not saying he couldn't write. I don't want it to come out wrong. But Sid's editors early in his time saw how dogged he was to get the info. And they're like, you get us the info. We can figure out this. Don't waste your time writing the column. Go get more info for us, you know. And basically he was just feeding people info. And so it kind of got to be a bit of a pattern. I'm not saying he didn't write his column. That's not what I'm saying. But he was so busy getting the info, he needed assistance to help him piece together the info into the written word, if that makes sense, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that's not that uncommon that big-time writers would have assistance to help, because they're out, you know, Sid was out every day. You think about that. He made rounds every day until he was like 95 years old. And when I mean rounds, he would drive out to the Vikings practice facility every day and make his rounds through the coaches, talk to them. Then he'd jump in the car and he'd drive to the Gophers facility, and he'd talk to the basketball coach, and he'd talk to the football coach, and he'd stop in and see Joel Maturi or whoever the AD was at the time. Then he'd hop in the car and he'd drive over to the Timberwolves and talk to Flip Saunders and talk to Kevin McHale and talk to Kevin Garnett and every day. And even if there wasn't a media availability, like there were many times where I happened to have to be on campus for something else, like we're taping the Richard Pitino show or something, right? And there's no scheduled availability, like there's no reason for reporters to be there. And I see, I walk down the hall and here comes Sid. And I'm like, what's he doing here? Am I missing a news conference? No, he's just making his rounds, talking to the coaches to get info. Mm-hmm. And the coaches aren't going to say no. Sid, you know, like everybody else has to call and get permission. Hey, can I talk to whoever, the hockey coach, Bob Motzko? Sid just walks in, right? Sid just walks in. So he has earned that. He had earned that. And that was his job. His job was to go get the scoop, go get the info, go get something, some nugget that nobody else has. And he did it every single day for 75 years.
And maybe better than anyone else has ever done it, Mike, as you mentioned. Sid Hartman, again, we'll miss him, but we'll move on a little bit now to some football talk, as the Minnesota Gophers are getting back on the field this week against Michigan. Can you tell us a little bit about just a refresher of what Minnesota is bringing back to the field this season? Because I do feel like while it was a great season last year, a lot of people may have forgotten on some of the little minor things that the Gophers still have there this year.
Yeah, I can remind you who's supposed to be back, but right. It's a great mystery as to who really will be back, because I think there's injuries. I think there's players who have opted out. I think there could be players who, and I have no inside knowledge. This is purely, you know, based on kind of what PJ Fleck has been saying for the last couple of weeks. I think there could be players who have tested positive for COVID, not a lot, but some. And if you test positive now on the daily testing protocol, you're out for 21 days. You have to be isolated for 21 days because they want to make sure that you go through their heart research to make sure that you don't have the myocarditis. So who knows? I legitimately, I don't know who will, what the two deep is going to look like. You know, it's going to be quite an experiment for Saturday for a radio guy who relies on, you know, getting info ahead of time. But I promise you, Jim Harbaugh is not going to offer anything up. And I think part of Jim Harbaugh not offering anything up is going to lead PJ Fleck to not offer anything up. And so, based on that, I think it's going to be a real mystery. And we don't know, you know, how the game's going to go because of that. And even if we knew, we wouldn't know how the game technically would go. So who's supposed to be back? I'll answer it that way.
Yeah.
They got to preface it because you just don't know. 2020, the year 2020, you just have to preface everything, it seems. So the whole offensive line should be back. All the tight ends should be back. The quarterback should be back. The best receiver. That's shortchanging Tyler Johnson, who, by the way, had his first career NFL touchdown yesterday.
Did real good.
They were 1 and 1A. So one of those two is back in Rashad Bateman. Chris Altman-Bell will go from the number three receiver, where he had seven touchdowns last year, up to the number two receiver. And then it would be interesting. I think one of the big storylines would be who's the number three receiver and how much will the tight end now get involved, a guy like Brevin Spanford from St. Cloud. And then Muhammad Ibrahim, who had the big bowl game last year as a freshman. He ran for 1,100-plus yards. Rodney Smith was healthy last year, so Mo's numbers were down a little bit. But Mo now will be back to what he was as a freshman, as the go-to back. And then there's some mystery as to who will be the number two and the number three running back. And then on defense is where all the mystery is. You know, you've got the two cover corners in Coney Durr and Benjamin St. Juice, two of the better cover corners, not just in the Big Ten, but in the country. One of the safety spots is likely locked down with Jordan Howden. The other one is the biggest hole in the entire team, in my opinion, to fill. That's Antoine Winfield Jr., who just continues to get it done with the Buccaneers. You have one starting defensive lineman out of the four back, and technically no starting linebackers back. You lost Kamal Martin. You lost Thomas Barber. That said, Mariano Sari-Morin started, I think, five, maybe six games last year when Kamal Martin was injured, including the bowl game, and had a great bowl game. So I think they feel pretty comfortable with him at one of the linebackers, and I think everything else is up in the air. So it should be interesting. And that includes punting and kicking. We're not sure where that goes either. I don't know who to write down on my charts as to who will be the punter and the kicker. So they have an Australian kid who's like 100 years old, speaking of Sid. No, I think he's like 26 or 27 years old, who is and that's become popular. I want to say I saw a tweet that 40% of punters in college football this year are projected to be Australian
guys
that they've gone and recruited, you know, because they can do the kick on the run thing, which has become popular. They can place the ball better because they grew up in that Australian rules and the rugby football. And directional kicking in that game is so important. So there's a lot of weaponry you can use if the kid's good. So if this kid's good, that'll be a weapon. I think they can improve in the punting games. That's a long answer, but, you know, that's what happens on a season opener. We'll have more answers after Saturday night, and we'll likely have more answers the Saturday night after that.
Let's talk a little more defense, Mike. The offense is kind of more stable, as you mentioned. I mean, Tanner Morgan's back, obviously. A lot of those weapons that you saw in the box score last year are going to be in there again. But on defense, as you mentioned, is where the biggest holes are. But on the other side, Michigan also has an offensive line that needs a lot of replacing, too. How do you feel like Minnesota's defense matches up with what the Wolverines are going to bring out there this weekend?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think up front defensively, so you lost three of the four starters. Sam Renner was one of the defensive tackles. The one starter that's back is Mike Adu Treadway. He's the grad transfer who Notre Dame had 2 years of eligibility left. And technically, now because this year doesn't count, he technically has another year if he wants to come back next year, because this year does not count for anybody's eligibility. So it could be a grad transfer that would have played 3 years at his new school. And, you know, I don't know if he has NFL aspirations. I don't know what the scouts think. Not sure if once you get your degree, you know, and maybe an advanced degree, you move on. But think you get a six years of schooling at Notre Dame and at Minnesota paid for, which, you know, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. So he's back. He's scheduled to be back. He's the starter. And then there's two or three guys that will likely vie for the other defensive tackle spot. Keontae Shad, the kid from Madison, Wisconsin, is probably the favorite to win the other spot based on last year. And again, no one has really seen fall camp, and they're not letting any info out. So that's just speculation on my part that he would win that spot. And then both defensive ends, Winston DeLotta-Badir, a 3-year starter, and Carter Coughlin, a 3-year starter, both graduated last year. One's in the NFL with the New York Giants and Coughlin. And so that brings in two guys that last year played a lot, but only in pass rushing situations. And that was Asezi Etomewa, a kid out of Indianapolis who the coaches believe has NFL potential. He's got the length. He has the look. Like, when you see him, it's like, yeah, that kid can be an NFL defensive end. And then Boye Mafe, who's a physical freak. Bruce Feldman, the national college football writer, included him on his freak of college football list this year. And so those two guys go from pass rushing specialists the previous 2 years, and now they'll be juniors, and now they'll be starting. And they'll be not just pass, pin their ears back, guys. They're going to have to stop the run. They're going to have to play gap control. They're going to have to play contain on the outside. And, in fact, in Mafe's case, in pass rushing downs, he oftentimes lined up as a defensive tackle and just, you know, pinned his ears back and went. So they have all the skill and talent in the world. The question now is, can they hone it in and be, you know, in the right spot, fulfill the assignment that's necessary? Because, you know, if it's a passing down, it's one thing to go get the quarterback. If it's a running down, you know, a defensive end might have a bunch of responsibilities. It might be, hey, I have to cover a running back on a play action. I have to contain. I'm not even supposed to make this tackle. I just have to turn the play back into the linebacker. You know, there's all kinds of stuff there where, you know, they have to understand that. Because if you're a defensive end and your job's contained and you don't contain, you know, a 2 yard gain can turn into a 30 yard gain or a touchdown. So those guys, if they're in the right spots and they take advantage of their athletic skills, there might not be much drop off, if any. But if they're not in the right spots and they're struggling with acclimating to becoming every down players, that could be a problem because that's an important spot.
The expert analysis from Mike Grimm. If the team plays good, they'll be good. I love it. Moving on, Mike.
No doubt.
Going a little bit wider here. Sorry there, I cut you off for a sec. But right now, Minnesota's ranked number 21. Michigan's 18. I'm still not looking at the polls really with any sort of value. There's teams who still haven't played a game there yet. There's teams who are 3-4 games in there. What's your take on what the polls are saying right now, at least? Are you still looking at them like they matter much or as they would have normally? And if not, at what point do you think, like, how many weeks into the season for the Big Ten will you be like, all right, now this is where things are being accurately measured?
Yeah, I don't think there. Obviously, there's not a critical enough mass to really know. Like we don't even know for sure. Like, do I think the Gophers deserve to be ranked 21st? Probably. I mean, I think you can make a legitimate argument that they that that's not
a
problem.
Even if not, they earned it.
Yeah, and but the question now becomes: let's see what team takes the field Saturday because nobody knows. If it's the team we think it is, then yes, they had a great year last year. They return a whole bunch of stuff on offense. They return enough defensive weapons to feel comfortable, and it should be the 21st team in the country. If we find out on Saturday that, you know, four guys have opted out, two guys are injured, and four or more have tested positive for COVID and are out for three games, that's not the 21st ranked team in the country all of a sudden, right? And I'm not suggesting any of that's happening. I'm just saying nobody knows. I don't know. So if it's the team we think it'll be, I think it's okay, and time will tell. I mean, there's no use to get you know, too worked up or worried about them. I think the teams clearly have played some games now. Obviously, Clemson is really good. Obviously, Alabama is really good. Georgia, even in a loss, I thought looked pretty good the other night. I think we can safely assume Ohio State's going to be in the mix for, you know, some national championship potential. And, you know, Notre Dame is up there, and they didn't play great against Louisville, but if you look, even the Alabamas and the Clemsons of the world usually at some point in their year, you know, have a game that they don't look great and they get a win. And that's what good teams do. And that's what Notre Dame did last weekend. So who knows where it all goes from there? You know, at the end of the day, it's probably Clemson and Alabama's world, Ohio State maybe. And then everyone else is fighting for the rest of the piece of the pie. And hopefully the Gophers get a good taste of it at some point.
It's a primetime game, Saturday night. College game day is going to be there, apparently viewed as the marquee game to start off the Big Ten season. Is this the most relevant Minnesota Gopher football has been going into a season in your time?
Yeah, I think so, no question, based on what they did last year and based on the fact that there appears to be a positive trajectory. I think absolutely. I think the fact that, you know, you think about it, I forget now, I knew it last fall when game day went there. There's only like a dozen schools that had never had game day visit their campus, and I think last year or in the last 2 years, I think they've taken care of three or four of those. I think Temple was one, and I think Syracuse and Iowa State were each one, and Minnesota was one. And now Minnesota is going to host it in regard to them in back-to-back games. I know that obviously game day has been to games in between there, clearly. But in terms of games at TCF Bank Stadium, the last one was Wisconsin, and game day was here. The next one is now this one Saturday, and game day's here again. So I think that is an indicator that the program's, you know, headed in the right way. And this is what I talk about a lot. Look, there's going to be negative people. There's going to be naysayers and doubters. And I know there are some people who just don't like PJ Fleck's style, and that's fine. I'm not going to argue with you on that. But if some of those negative people are going to just wait for PJ to drop a 4-8 season somewhere, even if it's 4 years from now, and say, see, I knew he wasn't any good. And that's just the way society is, right? Mm-hmm. But when PJ got the job, and look, he has a unique style, and he even admits he's not for everybody. But when PJ got the job, he said, you know what, we're going to sell out games again. We're going to get College game day here. We're going to go to a New Year's Bowl game. We're going to, you know, we're going to have people that aren't football fans start to like us because we're going to serve and give. And you know what's happening? They're selling out games, obviously not this year, but they did the last two last year. College game day is showing up. Almost every week we're seeing families who have kids in the hospital tweet out pictures of players who have come and visited the kids, and they've made a difference, and many times they're not even football fans, just as PJ said. So say what you want about him, and if you want to wait around, and maybe it'll be this year, who knows, where you have a year not as good as you think and say, see, I knew he was no good. That's okay. But I also think for the moment in time, he's done everything he said he'd do. And, I mean, you know, if you'd have said when he got hired, and the one thing I'd add is people kind of snickered when he said that, right, when he got hired, like, what's this guy flow up, right? And even I was like, whoa, this guy talks a pretty big game, you know. I mean, he's promised a lot of stuff here that he's going to have to deliver on. And here he is now entering year five and having delivered on much of it. Obviously, there's a lot still to work on. They'd love to get to to Pasadena someday. Certainly they'd, love to contend for a playoff someday. That's lofty talk, right? But we're legitimately talking about it, you know? I mean, they were 8-0 and ranked number 4 in the country for a moment last year. So, they have done what they've done. Now, in PJ's words, you know, take your victory lap and move on. I mean, the work still is there. There's still people, looking at you thinking that, you know, the other shoe's going to drop. And I know there's fans in Nebraska and fans in Iowa and fans in Wisconsin that, are like, when's that glass slipper going to fall off? And maybe it will. I don't know. But to me, let's enjoy the moment for the moment right now and hope that they can win the jug for the first time in a while at home on Saturday night.
Mike Grimm with us here on Kate Radio. Yeah, Mike, that jug is the oldest trophy in college football. But before I let you go, I just wanted to ask, I mean, in my mind, it's not top two for Minnesota, even for what they're trying to get as far as rivalry games go. Maybe not playing Michigan every year now has something to do with that, but yeah. What's the jug go on your rankings of, like, Minnesota trophies?
Yeah, I think sometimes it's like, it's like everything. If you don't have it, you want it, right? Yeah. And so now they have they had the axe for a year, but didn't have it for 15 years. So to me, that was the A number one you had to get. Now it's been, what, five years in a row that Iowa's won, Floyd? Maybe six. I can't, off the top of my head, remember. You want to get that. And the Little Brown Jug, Jerry Kill's team did win it in 2014 or 15. I can't remember which year. 15, I think. And so, you've got, but you haven't won that very much. I think mm-hmm. You've only won the jug like six or seven times. I'll know that by Saturday, by the way, when I really dive into my homework here this week. But it's only Monday, so catch me a little slack. But I can tell you this. The last time they won it in Minneapolis, take a stab. The last time they won the Little Brown Jug, Nate, I'll put you on the spot right here on Kate Radio. Last time the Gophers won the jug in Minneapolis, what year?
No, I have no idea. I was just in the process of Googling to answer the thing you posed, but I'll look away. I would guess, I don't know, 70s or 80s? I have no clue.
Yeah, 1977.
Oh,
1977. Wow. So think about that. The Michigan Wolverines never lost a game in the Metrodome. The last time they lost a game in Minneapolis was at Old Memorial Stadium. So that's two stadiums ago. They were undefeated at the Metrodome, and that's back when you played most every year. Obviously, it wasn't every year in the Metrodome, but you had the home and home almost every year. So it'd be fun to win it. They thought they had it won in 2016 when Drew Olatarski scored a touchdown with under 30 seconds to go, and then on review, his knee was down at the half-yard line, And then they squandered the chance. They threw an incomplete pass and failed on a quarterback sneak. They were down three with a chance. They could have sent it to overtime, but Tracy Clays, that was his first game after Jerry Kill retired, said he was going to go for the win. I loved the call. I even liked the play call, and it just didn't work. It just didn't work, and they didn't win it. So it'd be lovely to win it this Saturday night, national primetime audience, get the jug for the first time in Minneapolis since 1977.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now just before we let you go to bookend things. Minnesota won the jug four times in a row up until 1963. After that year, they've won it six times in total in about, what's coming up on 50 tries. So, I'd say it's one they want back.
They want it. They'd love to have that. So that did not answer your question. I gave a little bit of a history lesson and then also exposed some of my ignorance until I do my homework myself this weekend. But to answer the question, if you said you can win two of the three trophies this year, which one would you leave off? Quite frankly, I'd probably leave the jug off. And today you got to beat Iowa and you got to beat Wisconsin because that's probably going to win you the division if you do it. And it'd be nice to have Floyd and the axe in your trophy case. So I think you're probably right with your speculation. For the sheer importance of it and division play now, and you don't play Michigan every year, even if you haven't won it in a long time, I think you're probably right. And it's just such a great trophy. It dates back to 1903. And technically, clearly, it's not a trophy. It's literally a ceramic jug that they brought from Ann Arbor to drink and left it. And there was such a rivalry back in 1903, they said the Michigan, I suppose by telegram, I don't even know if there were phones in 1903, said, hey, can you mail us the jug? And there was such bitterness between the two teams. The head coach of Minnesota, Coach Cook, said, you're going to have to win it back. And the rivalry was born because they didn't come back to Minneapolis till 1909, and they won it back. And then they painted it, because the Gophers painted a big M on it when they gave it back. And so they redid it, and ever since 1909, it's been going to the winner.
Well, it'll be a good one this Saturday night. They'll play for the jug. First time since 2017 that these two teams have met. Mike Grimm will be on the call right here on KATE 1450 and all around the state of Minnesota and surrounding areas. Mike, I wish I could be out there with you for a good one from TCF Bank Stadium, but I know you'll be able to fill us in well. Thanks for joining us here on Kate.
Let me throw one other stat at you on the jug, okay? And then I'll say goodbye. The origins of the jug started in 1903, okay? That means when Sid Hartman was born, the jug was only seven. Well, technically, the jug started really in 1909, but from 1903, Sid Hartman was only 17 years old when the jug was only 17 years old when Sid Hartman was born. How about that?
That is a good one. In Minnesota, as I'm looking now, when he was born, Minnesota did hold the jug. So maybe a little bit of good luck too for the Gophers too. Mike, thanks as always for joining us here every week. We'll talk to you again next week. Hopefully, getting to talk about a Gopher win.
Yes, sir. Look forward to it, Nate. Thank you.